You're listening to the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at SevillePodcast.com. Lectures, radio shows, and more are available on demand at SevillePodcast.com. Now available through email. Sign up on our homepage. I'm Dan Gould. On October 14, 2009, the Senior Statesman of Virginia and the Charlottesville Senior Center co-sponsored a candidates forum featuring six candidates for the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. The candidates made brief statements of their positions on various issues, following which the session was opened for questions from the attendees. SSV board member Jim Perkins moderated the event.
Thank you and welcome to our forum today. Just a little bit of housekeeping. I'm not going to talk about the candidates with their bios. Their bios are in our newsletter and on the website that we have, which is seniorstatesman.org. So you can look at that and the extensive, very, very good backgrounds that these gentlemen bring to our forum. As a point about the newsletter, we had one correction on that. Mr. Rodney Thomas's first sentence in the newsletter states that he represents Jack Jewett. He doesn't. He's going to be a candidate and is a candidate for Rio. So that correction, if you'll make that in there. The questions that we're going to have at the end of this session will be submitted by cards. If you could get a card, if you want to submit a question, get one of these cards from back here at the table, write it, just hold it up, and one of our members will pick it up from you, and then we'll be able to field those questions, as many as we can. We have a number of candidates, so if you want to address it to a specific candidate, you may. If you want to just leave it open, any of the candidates who wish may respond to that. So please submit them. We do have enough candidates that giving them the time to respond will probably limit it. That's why we've extended this to 3:30. So we're going to give them time to be able to respond to those. So please pass them in. I would like to acknowledge as well that the incumbents, David Slutsky, who is the chairman of the County Board of Supervisors now, and our incumbent, Dennis Rooker, who is here. These people, as Peter has said, have given a lot of time and effort, and I would like to, again, thank them for the time and effort that they put in. Thank you very much. And as Peter has indicated, the candidates themselves have put in a lot of time. What we're going to do in terms of the format is that we're going to allow each of these candidates 5 minutes to give their introductory remarks. I've picked the order for this, and we're going to let Mr. Dennis Rooker go first, and then we're going to give the candidate who is the candidate for Rio running against David Slutsky, and then David will give his comments, and then I'll go down to the other district candidates in that order. So right now, Dennis, you're on.
Thank you, Jim. Is the microphone working or not?
Is that working? Okay. Thank you. I was very relieved when he made that correction about Rodney because I thought I was running unopposed, but you never know. I'm Dennis Rooker. I'm running for re-election as an independent in the Jack Jewett District. I've lived in the area for 40 years, a graduate of UVA, undergraduate in law schools, and I've practiced law here and owned and operated businesses here since over that 40-year period of time. I've been on the Board of Supervisors now for 8 years. Prior to that, I served on the Planning Commission for 4 years. Have served on the area's Transportation Board, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, for 8 years. Prior to that, I served for 12 years on the MPO Technical Committee. I've served on the county's Original Fiscal Impact Committee, the Meadow Creek Parkway Design Committee, the area's Planning and Coordination Council, which is a joint planning organization which includes the university, the county, and the city. My record over this period of time has emphasized supporting a fiscally sound government, providing the necessary support for excellence in education, protecting the environment and our natural resources, and cooperating with our neighboring jurisdictions. First of all, if we don't have a fiscally sound government, we can't do any of the other things. That's kind of the basis upon which you have to operate. And I'm happy to report that Albemarle County has consistently been one of the most fiscally sound localities in the country. We are one of only about 35 counties in the country now that have a AAA bond rating. We are the smallest county in the country that has a AAA bond rating. We have the lowest effective tax rate in the state of any county with more than 90,000 population. We have an unemployment rate, which is regularly the lowest, one of the lowest in the state, and in fact one of the lowest in the nation. Today our unemployment rate is about 4.9%, which is high for Albemarle County, but the national rate is about 10.8%, so we're about half of the national unemployment rate. We are regularly considered a leader in the use of technology. For the last 8 years, each year we've been selected as in the top 10 counties in the country for our use of technology. We have adopted a strategic plan in the county. We try to go about things somewhat strategically and somewhat systematically. We have a strategic plan. We have strategic goals underneath that plan. We have specific objectives underneath those goals. And every time we do something in the county, we get a staff report. Every time we're going to vote on something, we get a staff report that talks about how the particular action might affect something in our strategic plan. During the period I've been on the board, we've adopted a five-year financial plan, all localities budget, but we felt like we needed to look out for a longer period of time. So every decision we make, for example, we decide to make a capital expenditure, determine what the long-term operating impact of that capital expenditure is going to be. For example, if you open up some library space, you're going to have to have employees to service that space. So it immediately, the operational effect gets built into our five-year financial plan, so we understand the full financial ramifications of our decision. In education, we are regularly considered in the top 10% in the state, in the country. All of our schools are SOL accredited. Our high schools have regularly been included in the top 4% in the J. Matthews Index. Our SAT scores are substantially above the state and federal averages year after year. 82% of our graduates go on to college. 60% of our students have take advanced placement courses or take college courses while they're in high school. We have two of the only four charter schools in the state. Our teacher pay is something that became an objective over the last 6 years to get our teacher pay into the top quartile of our competitive market. We were able to do that, and prior to that, we were starting to lose teachers. We were finding that when we applied we had open positions and advertised, we were not getting the kind of number and kind of applicants we wanted, and we've cured that situation by improving teacher pay. 99% of our teachers are ranked as highly qualified under the standard of learnings. And just as an example, we teach conversational Spanish in all of our classrooms. I see my time is come to an end. I will say also that we are considered a leader throughout the state in environmentalism. We've taken numerous measures to protect natural resources and the environment in the county, and maybe I'll get a little time to talk about that later. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now we're going to hear for the candidate from Rio, Rodney Thomas. Rodney.
Thank you, Mr. Perkins. First of all, I'd like to thank the senior statesmen of Virginia for having us here today and the Senior Center for hosting this fantastic facility to us. I feel being born and raised in this area, running a successful business, and being on the Albemarle County Planning Commission for 8 years are some of my experiences that have equipped me to run for the Board of Supervisors. Having been chairman of the Planning Commission has prepared me for many of the tasks I would have to do as a supervisor. All the duties will be stemmed from what I learned as a commissioner, such as running a public meeting, bringing public comment, and making tough decisions. My work locally with the Boys and Girls Club and the Sorensen Institute and many other organizations has also given me a better sense of the community as a whole. My friends and neighbors have encouraged me to run because they think RIO needs a more responsive supervisor. I want to bring my 30 years of delivering quality customer service to the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. And before I close, I want to thank my wife of 42 years for putting up with me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Thomas. And now we'll hear from the incumbent, David Slutsky.
Is my mic on? Okay, good. Good afternoon. Trying to think how to build on what Dennis said. Dennis basically provided you with a pretty good overview of the state of things in Albemarle County. It's pretty remarkable how well run the county has been, and for the last 10 years at least. We, however, have a rather unusual moment in this country. We've had unprecedented challenges in our financial markets that are bringing about significant repercussions in the local government level. There's some things in my background that I think make me particularly well-suited to be able to continue to work on behalf of the county as we confront these more challenging times. My background is I have a degree at University of Chicago in political science. I have a coursework done for a doctorate in political science also from University of Chicago. I have a law degree in energy and environmental law. But it's mostly my career path that I think has served me well in becoming prepared to work on the board. I've been a successful business owner for most of my adult life. With my wife, I had a consulting firm for many years, which we sold in 1993 and moved our family to Charlottesville. We had a moment where we could choose where to live, and we looked at a lot of places, and this is where we settled, and this is where we will be for the rest of our lives. We love it here. Some of the same reasons that attracted us here are some of those same issues that motivated me to run for the board, because I wanted to protect the community and not lose some of the value that we had. I was particularly interested when I ran initially in preserving our natural resources and the way of life we have in our rural areas. Another issue that has emerged as equally important on my 4 years on the board is how to protect our economic stability on the board. As I have mentioned, we have challenging times ahead. The amount of money that we are receiving from Richmond in particular is eroding. As you probably have all experienced, our property values are eroding, and as a result, the county has fewer tax dollars coming in with which to operate. At the same time, we have an increased demand on our services. Our police do an extraordinary job with their current staffing. But their current staffing is inadequate by comparison to national standards that have been suggested by the Departments of Justice and the Bureau of Investigation. It's been suggested that we should have somewhere around 2.3 police officers per 1,000 in a community this size, and we have about 1.3 officers per 1,000. It's remarkable how crime-free we have been, but I'm concerned going forward that we're going to need to address that void. We also have an increased need for infrastructure. The increase isn't entirely reflected in the population growth in Albemarle County. You may know that we've had somewhere on the order of 1,000 new folks in the last few years coming in, which doesn't feel like an awful lot of growth locally, and it's not, except when you factor in the significant growth that's occurred in the surrounding counties. Fluvanna, Greene, Nelson, they have had a significant increase in new residents, and a lot of those residents work at jobs in Albemarle County. They come into our community, they drive on our roads, they do demand services from us, but they don't pay your property taxes to offset those. So we're going to have some significant challenges in the years to come. I've been looking carefully at that challenge and have figured out that the most productive thing that we could do to ensure economic stability going forward is to promote economic vitality. It's about jobs. If we increase the number of jobs in our community, if the commercial sector of our economy were to be booming, I think the result would be we would be able to have more of our revenue coming from the commercial side, which would take a lot of the pressure off of the residential side. In the last couple of years, I focused more of my energies on trying to encourage job growth. I was the fourth vote for the county to join the Thomas Jefferson Partnership for Economic Development. I was the fourth vote for the county to join the Chamber of Commerce. I had a significant role in making it possible for us to accommodate the new jobs up at the Rivanna Station. And I was instrumental in attracting to this county a grant for an energy retrofit program that is estimated will bring us between 900 and 2,000 new green jobs to our community. Each of those efforts were tied to my goal of trying to ensure economic stability in a challenging time. I will always look for creative and constructive ways to enhance our economic vitality, and I am also very sensitive to how much folks cherish our low tax rates, and I will continue to try and support those. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Slutsky. Before we get to the Samuel Miller District, I would remind people that this is a forum. This is an opportunity for us to be able to ask these candidates questions that we seek to have answers to in order to cast our vote. So please submit your questions on one of these cards. Just hold it up, and one of our members will be able to get it for you. Good. Thank you very much. And now I'd like to introduce the candidates for the Samuel Miller District, and we're going to go in reverse order of last name, since it usually in school the first one always come first. So Dwayne Snow, you get to be first. Dwayne?
Boy, I very seldom get to go first. This is great. I was born and raised here. My grandfather moved down here in 1912 and started a business. But my mother's side of the family actually lived up on Skyline Drive and was part of the group that was displaced when the parkway came through. So I've been in this area all of my life. I was green before green became popular. In fact, I have a green thumb from that goes all the way up to my elbow. I was driving a tractor when my feet were long enough to reach the pedals. I was able to work in the nursery when I was strong enough and big enough to hold a water hose. So I've grown up in the green industry, and it's been a great being a part of the county and making things green and beautiful. I am running specifically with the idea that I can help control waste and spending. I've had 35 years working in the running a business, a successful business in the area. I understand the importance of meeting a payroll and how hard that is. I understand that oftentimes businessmen have to put their whole livelihood on the line when it comes to running their business. I understand the importance of having a budget and sticking with a budget. I understand the importance of when times get tough that you have to really go in and look at your budget even in a more specific way than you've ever looked at it, and trying to make sure that you're covering your needs and distinguishing between needs and wants. I was talking to Deke Bowen last night, and we were talking about the budget and the shortfall in the county. He is a county resident, even though he ran the police department for a number of years. But Deke was telling me, he said, back in those days, we did have a budget that we had to stick to, and the whole city at that point was able to stick to the budget. He said, often I would get a call from Cole Hendrick and say, Deke, we've got a little problem with our budget. You need to cut your spending by 10%. And Deke said, well, you know, there was always a challenge to do that. But he said, I'd get my officers together, those that were in charge of making decisions, and say, okay, we've got to come up with 10%. He said, how do we do that? And he said, you know, we were able to cut waste. He said, we never cut services. We always had the same response time, but sometimes we had to give up some of the bells and whistles we wanted for that year. And then we put them back in the next budget. And I think that with the budget that we have today, not only is the county having trouble economically, but also the citizens are having trouble economically. And I think before we look at additional taxes, we need to look around, look at the budget, look at how we're spending it, having a zero-based budget. For those that may not be familiar with the zero-based budget, that's where you go back and look at where you're spending the money, why you're spending it, and are you getting your money's worth? And if you do that, I will guarantee you that you can come up with 15 or 20% savings by taking a hard look at your budget. I'm grateful to be running, and I appreciate your support in November. Thank you. Thank you.
Again, before we announce Mr. Lowry and let him speak, does anybody else have cards ready? Okay. Thank you. Mr. John Lowry, you're next, John.
Thank you. I am John Lowry. I am a candidate for the Samuel Miller seat on the Board of Supervisors. I enjoy listening to Mr. Snow talk about his generations in the area, and I'm married to a multi-generation family in the area. My wife's the sixth generation. My daughter, who lives in Belmont, Misha, is the seventh generation who's lived in Charlottesville. For those of you in my district, I ask for your vote on November 3rd. Thank you, senior statesmen, for this forum and the many that have preceded it. You are truly making a difference. Thank you also, Jim Perkins and Marvin Hilton, for your work on this event. Your emails have been coming to us dated at 1 and 2 a.m., so you must be anxious for us to do well. I grew up in Williamsburg, where I developed a desire to someday be elected to government service. I met my wife, Nancy, at William & Mary, and after college, we moved here to work, raise a family, and now spend our retirement, all while contributing to our community. Albemarle County is my home. Our children all attended Albemarle Public Schools and then public universities. I am invested in the county schools. I am a retired financial advisor. For 40 years, I worked in finance, and I have management experience. This gives me knowledge and skills to work effectively to help Albemarle during the current fiscal crisis. Over the decades, I have consistently been a community volunteer. I have learned much about the community that I'd like to serve. Like the other candidates for Samuel Miller seat, I've served Albemarle County by participating in the local government. I'm on the electoral board for the county. I've served on the Joint Airport Board. In fact, I was chair over the time period that the new airport was built. And I love and really think our gateway to the community is beautiful. I'm very proud of that. But what sets me apart from the other candidates is that I have been on the Economic Development Authority for 10 years, and over half that time as its chair. In the last 6 or 7 years, we have issued bonds in the name of the county for more than $500 million. And some of these $500 million have gone to Monticello, for Mont Alto and the Visitor Center, to the University of Virginia for a new acute care hospital, to Martha Jefferson Hospital and Westminster Canterbury. St. Anne's Belfield is using some of these funds right now for their new lower school. And I have to tell you, I wish there was a mechanism in place where we could use these kinds of funds for public schools. All of these projects have created and continue to create jobs. Of course, it's obvious that we need more good jobs in Albemarle County. And in these uncertain economic times, I have a track record of getting that done. Next month, a new supervisor will be elected to Samuel Miller, a new supervisor, a new beginning. Change not to fear, but to embrace. I believe we can and we should have an economic development office in the county to encourage the vitality of our choice. Responsible growth in the designated area means jobs. Jobs mean a paycheck, and a paycheck means a mortgage payment can be made. I'm in favor of jobs and low taxes. But responsible growth is more than just that. By helping businesses, small and large, grow, we can shift our tax base away from property taxes. We must not ask homeowners to shoulder all of the burden. Samuel Miller is more rural than most of the districts. It's important to preserve the rural character that we love about Albemarle County. We need a better transportation network in the county. new parallel roads, new extensions, new connections to make for smoother traffic. But it's not just about roads. It's about moving people safely with things like jaunt and safe pedestrian access. It has been refreshing to work and to knock on the doors of the voters in my district and hear their comments. Most people are upbeat, and they're filled with ideas about how to make our county better. We are very fortunate to live, work, and raise families and have healthy lifestyles in our community. I look forward to your questions, and let's have a dialogue about how life can be even better in Albemarle County.
Thank you very much. And now we'll hear from the other candidate for Samuel Mueller, Mr. Madison Cummings. Madison.
Good afternoon, fellow senior statesmen of Virginia. I've been a member for probably the last 2 or 3 years and joined at the behest a few years ago of my friend and mentor, John Baker. As you know, he's deceased now. I'm Madison Cummings, and I'm running for the Board of Supervisors from the Samuel Mueller District. I was born in Lexington, Virginia, and educated, graduated from Lexington High School, went to Hampton, Sydney, and BS in psychology, then went on to pharmacy school at MCV, and received a pharmacy degree in 1968. I've been at UVA. I'm still working part-time, but I actually retired after 34 years in 2004. As you folks prepare to make this important decision, which will affect yours and your family's lives for the next 4 years, I would like to make you aware of my experiences in volunteering and service in Albemarle County for the last 31 years. In North Garden, I've been a member of the Cove Garden Ruritan Club for 25 years, serving as president and treasurer in the 80s and 90s. I was involved in, as PTO chair at Red Hill School, where my wife taught most of her career and our children were educated, elementary. I spearheaded the building of playgrounds and fields when the county did not have enough money to do that. I also coached soccer for 10 years and baseball for two. In 1994, Sally Thomas appointed me to the school board, where I served for 8 years after being elected in 1997 for a second term. After that, I was appointed by the Board of Supervisors to the Commission on Children and Families. For 6 years, I served there and was chair the last 2 years. I feel that these experiences on the two boards and several others over the years have uniquely qualified me to hit the ground running as a board member without any steep learning curve which challenges any new board member. I'm well familiar with board mechanics, board responsibilities, and board, frankly, psychodynamics, because they exist as well. I've also prepared with my school board colleagues over the 8 years I served on the school board budgets of better than $100 million. The other boards and committees which I've served on as a volunteer are the Youth Service Committee, Health Advisory Board, African American Teaching Fellows Board, and the Community University Research and Partnership, Research and Service Partnership, which enhanced greater cooperation between the community and the University of Virginia. As you can see, I have a record of service and commitment to our community and the greater community of Charlottesville and Albemarle. My family has richly benefited from living in Albemarle County for the last 31 years, and now it's time for me to give back. Two of my children still live in Albemarle County. I am energized and excited to have the opportunity to serve you again and would appreciate your support on Election Day. I'm not done. My palm cards with a brief platform are on the back table, and also my website is madison4albemarle.com. And that I have a few copies of that back there, and that gives more of my concerns and interest in what I would like to see done on the board. My top six areas of focus are education, rural protection, transportation improvements, affordable housing for our workforce, promotion of local goods and services, fiscally responsible budgeting, and seniors, of which I am one. Finally, I'd like to thank Sally Thomas for her 16 years of service to this community. She endorsed my candidacy on September the 8th, and I would like to read the comments I made at that time. 2,500 years ago, the Chinese philosopher Confucius supposedly said, may you live in interesting times. Some folks have interpreted this sentiment as a curse, and others have considered it as a challenge or an opportunity. I prefer the second interpretation. The tough times our economy and thus our society are experiencing challenge us all to be more reasoned and creative about our approach to everything. This includes those essentials like making the education of our youth paramount, maintaining fiscal responsibility without forgetting the needs of our less fortunate fellow citizens, and searching for new strategies to address our difficult national problems regarding energy, employment, and a decent quality of life. I believe my proposals for not just maintaining but advancing Albemarle County are sound. I am eager to get to work with my colleagues to keep our county a wonderful place to live for our children and grandchildren. We're Americans. Let's move forward boldly into the future while preserving the valuable legacy which has been entrusted to us by our forebears. Thank you. Thank you.
And now we're going to move into another interesting and important part of our program forum, and this is going to be the questions and answers. I have here a bunch of questions that have been submitted, and we will give the candidates 2 minutes each to address the issue. And it's in random order, so I'm going to read the question. You'll get 2 minutes. You don't need to respond, but if you wish to, please raise your hand. We'll call on you, and we'll just go down in the two-minute order. The first question is, what action would you take to enable restaurant chains such as Olive Garden and Cracker Barrel and big box stores such as Home Depot to open in Albemarle County? So who would like, Dwayne, and then Dennis, and then Rodney?
First of all, we need an economic plan. You know, we've got an economic statement where we say nice things. Well, we want to attract nice, clean businesses to the area, but there's really no economic plan. A plan is something that you, where you have goals, you have a method of achieving those goals, and then you have a way of measuring those goals. Right now, we do not have an economic plan in the county. So, number one, the first thing we'd want to do is develop an economic plan and decide what type of businesses we want to attract and what type of businesses we want to bring in. Right now, we set aside 5% of our county out of 100%, we've got 5% set aside for growth. Now that we've got 5% set aside, we make it extremely hard, even though we have the land zoned and we have the land available for these businesses to move in, we make it almost impossible for them to come here because we demand so much from them. I think one thing that we can do, once we get an economic plan and the land is set aside for these businesses, we need to help them to locate here so that they have that opportunity to grow our tax base so that we take some of the pressure off the individual family. Thank you.
Thank you. Dennis?
Yes. First of all, the county does not determine the particular retailers that decide to locate within the county. What we do is provide adequate land uses for businesses to locate here. We have today about 3 million square feet of retail, of commercial space that is approved in the county that has not been built out. We have about 18,000 residential units, spaces, lots approved in the county that have not yet been built out. So there is no lack of available, developable land within the county for commercial growth to take place. The county has been the center of job activity for the entire region. We've added more jobs over the last 7 or 8 years than the surrounding areas have combined. We do have an economic plan. It's contained within the comprehensive plan. We approved a new one about 9 months ago. It was supported by the Chamber of Commerce, supported by the Free Enterprise Forum, and every other group that weighed in on it. the 5% of the land that is in the county that is set aside for development. We have rural areas and we have growth areas. 5% sounds like a small number, but it is actually 35 square miles, which is 3.5 times the size of the city of Charlottesville. We have plenty of space within that to grow. And if we grow in the form of sprawl by going out and plowing up green fields that are outside of the growth area, we'll find that we have no nexus to our community. We'll find that transportation becomes more and more difficult as things spread out. We'll find it very difficult to use transit, et cetera. So I think that, in fact, Albemarle Place just is an example in terms of restaurants and Vox's Albemarle Place, which has been working for many years to get to go forward, which is on the corner of Hydraulic and 29, is, I think, in a position shortly to get going with their development. They've signed leases over there. They've had to work through sewer issues and other issues. But they are bringing in a Trader Joe's, which I think is something this community will much appreciate. And I think they have two national very good restaurants eventually coming in there.
Thank you very much. We're going to hear from Rodney Thomas and then David Slutsky. Rodney?
Okay, on the fact of the anchor stores that shopping centers usually need to put in, the maximum footprint is 65,000 square feet. And that's called community service. I think that probably should be doctored a little bit and let the larger stores come in, and which would create a whole lot more jobs. I don't want to build out the rural area. I want to save the rural area. We need to put a sign up, open for business. Albemarle County has created a no business wanted for years, and it's been said we don't need the business. Well, I got news for everyone. We do need it. We need it for employment, and we need it for tax infrastructure. We need it to take the burden off of you guys as residents. That's why I would like to see more of that type thing come to Charlottesville. I also would go another direction on that, and I would like to educate the kids more in K-Tech to learn trades so they can get better jobs, keep the education up to create more jobs for the children. And Dennis was talking about Albemarle Place. Albemarle Place should have been on the ground a long time ago because it was really what the county wanted in the neighborhood model, or a neighborhood model. It had everything that was needed. And I remember Dennis and I were working on it on the commission at the time, and they really bent over backwards to get things done the way we wanted it to be done. The only thing I really didn't like about it, again, was that 65,000 square foot maximum footprint. Because when you open a place like that, you have to have an anchor store to support it and get it off the ground. Again, more signs, open for business, and start economic development.
Thank you very much. And now we'll hear from David Slutsky. David?
I mean, I think the spirit of the open for business sign is right, but I think you need to go far beyond holding up a sign. You actually need to have your elected officials be in a position to do things that will make it possible for desirable businesses to relocate here. An example of some things that I've been working on that are along those lines. There's a desire to protect the bay. The EPA has asked Virginia to review and revise its stormwater regulations in a way that would be more protective of the bay. Virginia DCR, the Department of Conservation and Recreation, issued some draft regulations that were ruthless in protecting the bay, but they also were going to have a profound chilling effect on the business climate in the Commonwealth of Virginia. The bottom line of these proposed regulations is that they were going to require developers to achieve much more protective levels of runoff on site, and the result of that was going to be that they would have de-densification. They would have less intensive development on their properties, and in the case of large rezonings, like Dennis alluded to before, some of them might be rendered stale zoning because the cost of compliance was going to be just prohibitive. The business community came to me because I'm an environmentalist. I had served as a senior policy advisor in the White House on environmental issues, and that gave me some legitimacy. And they asked me if I could go to Richmond and do battle on this. And I took them up on it and went and met with the governor and met with the Secretary of Natural Resources and the head of DCR and made a compelling argument that what they were trying to do to protect the bay, which was clearly a good purpose, was having an unintended chilling effect on the opportunity for business growth and development in the Commonwealth. And I came up with an alternative proposal for how they might achieve their environmental purpose even better than they had originally proposed, and in a way that would make it possible for businesses to function. What I proposed is basically what was codified in the regs that were tentatively voted on about a week ago in Richmond. They'll be finalized later this year and signed by the governor. And there are folks in the business community who know that I have done those kinds of things to make it possible for us to be open for business.
Thank you very much. Any other candidates wish to respond? Okay. Mr. Lara, John?
Thanks. An Olive Garden, a department store, these would be great things to have. The question is, businesses have to want to come here. Is the county perceived as being friendly to business? As I mentioned in my opening remarks, I am the chair of the Economic Development Authority, and I think we need to have an economic development office. It's more than just a plan. We need an office. Here's an article in today's Daily Progress. Our area, Charlottesville, is recognized as one of the most startup friendly in the nation by Money Magazine. You know who's quoted? Aubrey Watts, the Charlottesville Economic Development Director. Albemarle doesn't have an economic development office. Dennis Rucker and David Slutsky, you guys are on the board. I told the board last February when they had the economic policy presented, they needed more than a policy, they need a strategy. We need to have an economic development office to invite businesses here. We can't say which businesses, they have to want to come, and right now we don't have an office thinking every day just a little bit to try to get them to come here. That's my answer.
Thank you very much. Mr. Company, Madison?
Well, as has already been pointed out by Dennis, we in fact do have an economic development plan, and there are multi-million square feet of available space for business development. As you know, Virginia is the number one state in the country where people want to do business, and Charlottesville certainly is an attractive place. If we're not welcoming to businesses, and I mean valuable startups, valuable businesses, which will give our youth excellent jobs, not just a service job like McDonald's or maybe another restaurant like that. We need to be working on that. As a member, KTEC was mentioned, as a member of the KTEC board for 7.5 of the 8 years I was on the school board, I can tell you that this was from 94 to 01, and even at that time, we had an advisory board to those kids, and we're helping those students get good jobs locally, and body repair and service shops and carpenter's jobs and so forth were good paying jobs, and these were kids who were more interested in doing that. So I think that we have a strong environment for business here. I would like to see the employees in the county office building employ a better approach perhaps to folks who come in. I do hear occasionally that there are county employees who are less welcoming and sometimes rude. I would hope that we would work on that. And as I've said repeatedly before, we all learned the 3 R's when we were in school. Well, that was reading, writing, and arithmetic. And the 3 R's that I would like to see maintained by our county employees are responsibility, responsiveness to folks who come there, and finally, respect. And I think that sometimes that may have been lacking. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next question pertains to the relationship between Albemarle County and the city of Charlottesville. How would you join with city government in areas where they can to help in making both areas save taxpayer dollars? Okay, we'll go with Rodney Thomas first. Rodney,
well, I would start off, number one, by planning a meeting with the city of Charlottesville to do something with the revenue sharing. I think that the revenue sharing should be taken part. We should be putting money, like in KDEC again, use ALB money rather than us having to pay extra, use part of the revenue sharing to go into KTEC, which would be a great opportunity to, for the county to use their own money on what they want to use it on. As it is right now, we have no say-so over that money that's spent inside the city of Charlottesville. $18.8 million is what the check's going to be for in January. And it will be hand-carried down to City Hall. They walk it down. It's kind of a ritual they, that they send out, take it down. The other thing I'd like to see that revenue sharing used on, which is, is some of the fire protection. Right now, we're paying a fee to the city for their fire trucks coming into the county, and then we pay, I think it's $250 per call over a certain amount, and it's well over $1 million we're giving the city out of that. I would like to see revenue sharing pay for that. Education, we've tried to cross over and to make things work as a joint effort. I think with a little more effort, we probably could do that, but it will take a long time. I would like to move in that direction. Police is another one that really, really would be probably the easiest maybe to do. None of it's going to be easy, but it may be the best one for us to do. It would save both locales a lot of money. Now, we hope there's no policemen in the audience because I don't think they like what I'm saying. But I think it's the financial part, that the money saving that the whole area needs to do. But I really would like to see us start using the revenue sharing money on something that we want to put it into.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dennis Rooker. Then David.
City and county cooperate on many, many things. Today, and a lot of times people don't realize how much we cooperate. We had an efficiency study done by VCU of the county last year to try to find additional budget efficiencies. And as a part of that, they commented that the city of Charlottesville and Albemarle County cooperate in more areas than any other two localities in the state. We have the Ravenna Water and Sewer Authority is a joint operation. The Ravenna Solid Waste Authority is a joint operation. KTEC is a joint operation. The MPO is a joint transportation board. Planning and Coordination Council is a city-county university planning agency. The Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission is a multi-jurisdictional commission. The jail is a joint operation. The special needs school here is a joint operation. And I haven't named half of them. So I don't want to leave people with the impression there isn't a lot of cooperation. We can always do more. On the fire and rescue side, what we do today is we have an agreement with the city of Charlottesville where when there are calls that they respond to in the county, we pay them, and when there are calls that the county responds to in the city, they pay us. It's a mutual aid agreement. We do this, and of course, rescue today is a voluntary operated program throughout the area except for the Monticello station and the Holly Mead stations. Revenue sharing is an interesting thing because it's an agreement that goes back to the 1980s. It's a contract. It's a contract that the county passed by a referendum after its board of supervisors negotiated it with city council because the city had the right to annex parts of the county. In fact, Rockingham County had just annexed almost the entire the city of Harrisonburg had annexed pretty much the entire commercial area of Rockingham County shortly before that agreement was reached. Today it requires the county to pay 10 cents on its tax dollar to the city. The city pushed for 25 cents up until 2 days before the agreement was reached. And to change that agreement, you would have to have a referendum of the county. First of all, you'd have to have the two parties agree, and then you'd have to have a referendum of the county. We have been pushing, and I think Rodney is right, we should push, we should continue to push, to try to see that some of those funds are spent on things that are of mutual benefit to the two localities. Another area I would like to see us agree on is that there could be a universal recreation pass. Both the city and the county have many recreational facilities for their citizens, and I think citizens ought to be able to buy one pass and utilize all of them.
Thank you very much, Mr. David Slesky. David?
Dennis, you listed many, and there are a couple more I want to make sure folks are paying attention to. The city runs the bus system. They own the rolling stock, and you'll notice the bus system is very downtown-centric, yet 80% of our commercial activity is along Main Street, which is 29, not Main Street. I would like to see us enter into a collaboration with the city to form a regional transit authority. And in my role as chairman of the board of the MPO, the planning organization Dennis referenced, I've been, I think, successfully encouraging a dialogue between the city and the county where we are reasonably likely to be able to have a regional transit authority in the foreseeable future. We actually got enabling legislation out of the General Assembly last session to make it possible for us to do that, and City Council has unanimously agreed, as has our board, to moving towards a regional approach. There's another thing that I brought up a couple of years ago, TDRs, transferable development rights, and I had an idea that I was trying to float into the public dialogue about how we might protect more rural lands by making it possible to transfer some of those rural development rights into a different place where they might be better used. It's challenging to do it in the county for a lot of reasons, which we've explored during the public dialogue. But I had some conversations with my friends on the city council, and it turns out that they might be interested in taking some of our rights. So I think that's going to be an interesting opportunity for some collaboration. The city and the county and the university have collaborated significantly on climate change issues, and it's partly because of that collaboration that we were able to attract a $500,000 grant to start this green jobs energy retrofit program that I mentioned before. The city, the county also have been collaborating on affordable housing. We convened a joint task force a couple of years ago, spent a year studying how we might improve affordable housing opportunities. I chaired that joint body, and what we came up with were a number of recommendations, very few of which would actually cost county taxpayers money, but they would be tweaks to our policy that would accommodate collaborative affordable housing opportunities. I'm running out of time, so I'll stop. There's plenty of collaboration going on.
Thank you very much. Duane Snow, and then John, and then.
Well, with all this collaboration going on, the only thing I can think to add to it is that a lot of good thoughts have come forward, but we've got to be careful that in the effort to collaborate, that we don't get carried away with spending and making sure that we cost each item out to see exactly if we're saving money or if it's going to cost us more. If it's going to cost us more, then we don't want to do it.
Thank you very much. John Lowry?
As Mr. Perkins mentioned, as we began, the incumbency has a certain value to it, and our incumbents speak ably about what we already have in the way of city-county agreements. The only thing I'd add is, of course, Virginia's a different sort of state than most states. We have the city operating independently inside the county, and they're logically, the two ought to be together completely. So we wouldn't have an overlap in school system and police and fire and rescue. But I certainly would encourage long term for those service things to be joined together. There would be significant savings. On the revenue sharing agreement, it is a contract, and they can't get out of it. However, it's possible that the city may revert someday to being a town. And then we really truly would have one county entity which would include the city, and then that would do away with the revenue sharing agreement. Another similarity of the two is we are both AAA rated. As Mr. Rooker mentioned in the beginning, we are the smallest county in the nation with a AAA rating. Our county is. The city is also AAA. The difference is cities can borrow without getting permission, a referendum from the voters. The county can't. That would be really terrific to have the county be able to borrow tax-free AAA without having a referendum each time. And I also agree with Mr. Slutsky. I really admire what he's done through working with the state of Virginia in getting a transit authority approved for the county. And if Mr. Slutsky's elected and I'm elected, I would enjoy very much, David, working with you on a transit authority.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cumming, Madison.
Thank you. My understanding, after many times, I'm on the streets canvassing frequently, and many people say, what can we do about that revenue sharing agreement? And as already has been alluded to, it's a contract we made, actually our own Senator Tom Mickey back in 84, something like that, maybe 82, was the designer of that particular agreement. And it's an agreement which is significantly, economically and in other ways, benefited Albemarle County. I think that we're stuck with it. But there are opportunities, perhaps. And I was chatting with one of the members of the city council, whose name I won't mention here, yesterday, and said, what could we do, joint projects could we do together for that 18.8, I thought it was just 18 million. So they may be willing to talk about it at least. As I mentioned, I served on the KTEC board, and I served with city residents, city members of the school board. I also served on the Commission on Children and Families, and there were city folks from Parks and Rec, police department, superintendent, and school board members, and worked with school board members over the course of the 8 years that I worked. So 8 years on school board and 6 years on the Commission on Children and Families. And somebody mentioned earlier that incumbency makes a difference, but also experience and background and the willingness to cooperate and compromise makes an experience as well, makes a difference as well. When I was on the school board in the late 90s, I approached the superintendent and said, Kevin Kastner, how can we cut this doggone transportation budget? And as you know, Albemarle County is a huge place. And the transportation budget, obviously I wanted more for the classroom. The transportation budget at that time was 7%. And we tried to cut it, and I think they got it down to 6, but now it's climbed back up to 8% of the budget. So that's just one area that I've tried to work and see if maybe we could meld, at least in the urban area, the two transportation systems for the schools of the city and the county. That hasn't come to fruition yet, but it's a possibility. One opportunity maybe we could consider again. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next question pertains to our real estate. The Daily Progress recently reported that housing prices have dropped by about 20%. How should the board respond to lower real estate assessments? I'll take it on. Oh, well, Duane? Okay. And then John? Okay.
Well, the fact that we are having lower assessments, that means there's also less money coming into the county. So the way a lot of politicians would like to resolve this is say, well, we've got less money coming into the county, so we've obviously got to raise taxes. And so I'm back to taxes again. There's nothing we can do about raising those property values back up until the economy improves. But in the meantime, you can't tell someone that is already struggling to make ends meet that we've got to raise taxes some more because we've got less money coming in also. When I was running the business, when we had a business at Seminole Square for a number of years, and we were going through a small recession at that point, and my rates on the amount of business we had was dropping off dramatically, and my lease was almost up. I went to my landlord and said, can you give me a break on the lease until I can get out of this lease? And thankfully, he said yes, he'd help me out. But when I left there, I moved back to Avon Street, and I didn't have enough money in my budget to replace a rotten door. There's a lot of homeowners that in this economy that are suffering economically. So to say that we need to raise taxes in the county without first looking in the county to see where the waste is in the county government and in the programs that we have is a huge mistake. I'd say number one, cut the waste in the county, and then from there we can make decisions. But do you realize that the county government has never had a zero-based budget? Thank you.
I'd like to respond to that. Okay. County actually did try zero-based budgeting back in 1990.
And they went away from it, as have virtually most larger organizations that have looked at it, because it what we do today is what I would call a modified zero-based budget. We do look at every line item in the budget to determine whether or not it's something we need to fund or not fund. But Azir, actual, you know, full-fledged zero-based budgeting is incredibly time-demanding for the people involved in the budgeting process, the staff. And at the end of the day, I've also participated in a business that went through zero-based budgeting. At the end of the day, it was abandoned because it took up a lot of time of staff that could have been spent elsewhere and did not result in a superior budget, in my opinion. The county has, right, the effective tax rate in the county today is about 54 cents per $100 valuation. And how you get there is if you take all the revenue in the county and divide it by all the real estate revenue and divide it by the value of all the property, that's the number you get. And the reason for that is we have land use. We have a 74-cent nominal rate, but we have land use, which 60% of the county land is in land use. That property pays about one-tenth of the taxes, pays about 7 cents of tax rate as opposed to 74 cents. We have a tax relief for the elderly program, which also reduces the revenue to the county, and then we give 10 cents of the tax rate to the city. Before we raise rates, we always need to look for efficiencies. We always need to make certain that we are getting the most out of the revenues that we currently have. But I will tell you that 80% of the budget is pretty much is in people. We actually have 65 less people today than we did in 2007 in our upcoming budget. We've cut $100 million out of our capital budget. We haven't given a raise now in 2 years. So I would suggest we are operating very efficiently, and that if home values drop, I think what you'll probably see is the tax rate come up so that the total tax burden remains relatively constant. And I think that's what the landowner is interested in, is what he pays in taxes, not necessarily what the rate is or what the valuation is, but the combination of the two.
Thank you very much. I want to get to Mr. Lowry, then David, and then Rodney.
All right. The question referred to a 20% decline in market values. I wasn't aware it was that steep. The county most recently had a minus 2%. But the point is the assessments follow the market values, and clearly they're on the way down. As Mr. Rooker points out, what we've been doing recently is revenue neutral. The property tax has gone up in a nominal way, but the true tax bill hadn't changed. But what all this shows is that relying on property taxes alone is unsustainable. And that's what I've been talking about, having a economic development office and encouraging economic vitality in the growth area could increase. I can go through a quick computation showing you could have $20 million from commercial taxes over a period of time that would be a replacement for the property tax. What we need is to have more revenues. It's not, as Mr. Snow characterizes, a crisis of wasteful spending. We have a crisis of not having enough revenues to provide the services that we like. I am a true fiscal conservative. I believe that our expenses should be shaped by our revenue, so we need to find other ways to get revenues. Finally, I'll close on this property tax question by pointing out about 3 weeks ago I read a study by Moody's. Moody's Investor Services does studies. They pointed out that in states in the nation, there's going to be varying times before prices recover. But the Virginia area was among the slowest of the states, that the recent highs in property values may not come back until 2020s, early 2020s. I don't know if it's going to be that long. But the point is we have clear direction to look other places to create revenues, and we can't rely on increasing property taxes.
Thank you very much, David Suski, and then Tom Fritz.
Pretty straightforward what you have to do in a situation where your property values are declining. You've got to minimize your expenses,
and you got to increase your revenues. It's not rocket science. On the minimize expenses side, sometimes you have to look at the budget carefully, and as Dennis points out, we do a modified zero-based budget, and as each of us consider the budget process every spring, we each in our own way look at the budget item by item. In the last couple of years, I voted against a want, the Crozet Library. I thought that replacing a 1,900-square-foot library with a 20,000-square-foot library was inappropriate, and I suggested we make it about half that size, save a few million dollars in our capital budget, but I was the only one on our board that voted that way. I voted against the turf fields that were going to be built, put in the schools. It's $220,000 or $225,000. A lot of people like the fields. I had issues with them on health and safety concerns. But separate from that, I thought it was a bad budget idea because we had a lot of private donors who were funding most of the rest of it. And I figured if we didn't agree to fund $200,000, they would have built them anyway. I voted a couple of times to scale back our investment in the ACE program, the conservation easement program. I love the conservation easements. I think that the ACE program is fabulous, but it was one of those items where I felt in a really difficult downturn in the economy like we've had the last 2 years, that might be in the wants category for me, and I was willing to sacrifice it to be fiscally responsible. The other thing you can do is bring jobs, and I've talked about some of the things that I've done in that regard and will continue to do. But I got to tell you, I find it frustrating in a campaign process where candidates sit there and say, well, you know, we're going to cut the waste. And then they say, I want to have zero-based budgeting. Well, if we're interested in zero-based budgeting, then that must mean that these candidates have already looked at the budget and have at least some suggestions, some specific ideas about what waste they want to see cut. And I haven't really been hearing that thus far, and I'd be interested to hear it.
Thank you very much. I must give the time for our communications director to get the mic lined up. Rodney Thomas is next. Rodney?
Yes. In response to Mr. Slutsky's remark about looking at things, there's a lot of ways that you can cut. I mean, you want to cut the waste out of the budgets. And I don't think at this time we would want to say staff, staff, staff. I think it's going to be obvious as to where we need to make the cuts when we get into the budget. And cut the wasteful spending. Be careful. Be really, really careful. Create an affordable county government. I like the zero-based budget, too. I do it with my company. I've done it with the five companies I've had over the years. Keep the tax burden low. Now, I guess that keeping it even and level would be a way to keep the county residents affordable on the tax burden. And, again, continue to improve our economic development and make it a more comprehensive plan. I would like to see the Thomas Jefferson Economic Development Director, Mike Harvey, be more a part of with the county, work more with the county. I think he's working pretty hard with the city, but the county needs to open the door up a little bit wider so he can come in.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cummings, do you wish to comment?
First, I'll mention the Crozet Library that David alluded to. I don't know if any of you folks have been in the Crozet Library, but that is the most jam-packed library that I've ever seen. When I found out that $100 million was pulled off the CIP, capital improvements budget, and then I heard from county staff that we could perhaps, because the bid climate is so optimum right now, we might could save 15% on that library if we had kept it on the budget. I dealt with that as a member of the school board when we were getting ready to build Monticello High School, which I think is an absolutely wonderful facility. But as Al Reeser, whom some of you know, he was facilities management in the time, and Carol Hastings, who was the interim superintendent, and then Kevin Kastner, I mentioned to all of them that I thought we needed to open that high school 1 year earlier. If we had opened it, if we had started on it earlier, and if we had opened it 1 year earlier, we could have saved $1 million to $2 million because the bid climate at that time, when I was rabid about it, was much more positive. In dealing with budgeting also, I came on to the school board when the there was an absolute, that spring in 94, it was such a situation with the budget that we had to fire the superintendent. The budget person was probably, well, I won't go there. But at any rate, the budget was an absolute mess. So the next year, I went to one of Sally's close friends and also a friend of ours, Linda Perriello, and said, could we sit and look at this budget and go through it and just comb through this and see, make sure that things are good. And she helped very much with that. She also is intending to keep my feet to the fire when, and has asked me repeatedly, when the assessments go back up, what are you going to do about the taxes? And of course, you know, we'll address that when that issue comes up. Not only did the $100 million come off the capital improvements budget in a wonderful bid climate era, it also affected the staff as far as having fewer staff in the greater responsibility as far as projects. In interviewing folks all over the county, I discussed various issues with people who are in planning and so forth, and sat with Bill Leteri, who's the facilities guy, and it's depressing to do this, but I'm coming to the issue of zero-based budgeting, which I think is, we perhaps are at zero-based budgeting now, whether we want to be or not. We're at least at baseline budgeting because of the number of folks who were who are those positions that are frozen. I should stop now.
Yeah, thank you very much. The next question pertains to the land use tax classification. The question is, what negative results would occur if the land use tax classifications were to be eliminated? Dennis, David, Rodney, everybody. Okay.
The land use tax program is a program whereby property that is in farmland or kept in open, qualify in open space, or forest land qualifies for a much lower tax rate, and that rate is about, comes out to be about 1/10 of the tax rate that's applied to other property. People that have their property in land use pay full tax on their house. The total cost of the program to the county last year was about $18 million. We just put in place a revalidation effort. You probably read something about that in the newspapers, whereby we've required everyone who is in land use to fill out forms and submit information to verify that they actually qualify for land use, because there probably are some properties out there that have been getting the benefit of that tax break that might not qualify. We want to make certain that the program is only going to those who actually meet the definition. If you eliminate the program, the argument, and there certainly is an argument that you could eliminate the program, you could perhaps capture as much as $18 million in taxes, you could lower everybody else's tax rate by what might be as much as 10 cents. The land use program was established so to encourage people not to develop their property, to encourage people to keep their property in farmland. There are places that have eliminated land use and have seen a lot of the farms disappear in those areas because the farmers could no longer afford to pay the taxes on the property and continue doing what they were doing. So I think that's the balancing thing. We held a hearing. We held a public hearing this past year that was probably a four-hour public hearing. There were a lot of people that weighed in on it. And we were looking at the possibility of, you know, do you eliminate the program? Do you revalidate? Do you go to a midpoint, which is something that Mr. Slutsky was quoted on the papers the other day, a program he had looked at, and I looked at with him last year, and that's the possibility of requiring property to be put in permanent conservation easement in order to qualify. Ultimately, after hearing all of the information from staff and the citizens, we decided to go forward with revalidation and see where that would lead us.
Well, the question was, what would be the negative impacts if the program were eliminated? And I actually can't imagine our board would eliminate the program. I certainly wouldn't support it, and I don't think anyone on the board currently would. It provides immense value in that it does create an incentive for rural lands to be protected for a period of time. However, as you probably read in the paper recently, and it was a bit of a premature article, let me assure you, I don't have a proposal. I'm trying to look at all items in the budget, and I looked at the revenue sharing agreement, and I looked at the $18 million there, and then I looked at the land use tax investment the county makes, and that's another $18 million. And then when I noticed that on the 60% of the county's acreage that's in land use tax, we actually pay more to the city of Charlottesville under revenue sharing than we collect from the farmers who own that land. And it's because the basis upon which the payment to Charlottesville is made is based on fair market value, and yet the basis upon which we receive taxes from the rural landowners is based on the use value. So I looked at that, and I thought, in the spirit of examining every corner of our budget, this is a big item, or two big items, and let's examine them. The appeal I have that I find from the idea of limiting the program to properties in conservation easement is because it does allow rural landowners to keep the land use tax rate effectively, and it allows the county to benefit from them putting that land in conservation. There are a number of impacts that I would like to study before I would feel comfortable actually bringing a proposal like that forward. If I became convinced that we would see a wholesale selling out of rural properties, dumping into the market, which would drive rural properties values down and strand some farmers, it would be a disaster and I wouldn't support it. There's some economic theories that suggest that might happen, and there's others that suggest that when you have a large scale reduction of available development rights in an area, what you actually get is an increase in average property values in addition to the benefit of land use tax. So I think it's an issue that we need to examine, and we need to examine it carefully and thoughtfully. And as Dennis pointed out, the first leg of that journey was to do revalidation. And then next year we might at least look into this and just see if there is a revision of the program that would be beneficial. I will point out finally that in my district, there's maybe 10,000 voters, and there's 43 people in land use tax. So I think when I look after the land use tax issue, I think I'm representing my district's interests very directly, because if we did have a change in revenues associated with land use tax, it would directly benefit my district, and I think that's my job.
I've got Mr. Lowry, or you want to go with your? No? Okay. Dwayne? Did you?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Mr. Lowry?
I thought Mr. Snopes had indicated you want to go first.
Yeah, did you want to go first? Dwayne?
Sure.
Yes, I'll go first.
Go ahead.
One follow-up to the last question before last. With this tight budget that we now have in the county, and we don't have hardly any money to go around, have you ever noticed, though, there's always another million available for another study? It's always there. We need another study. We'll do it. 800,000, a million, don't worry. It's always there. So that's a tight budget. My thoughts on taxes and land use, I don't think it's a matter of taxes. I think it's a matter of personal property rights and being able to say, okay, this is my property. What can I do with it? The people that live in the county that are getting a tax break on their property, they have that in land use. Most of them don't use the services that those in the urban ring use. For example, if it snows, what's the last roads to get plowed? It's those out in the furthest end of the county. Those right around the city, they start plowing there at night and go all night long. When it comes to fire and rescue and police protection, who gets the attention? It's those that are in the urban ring that are using those services. Who gets most of the roads? Who gets most of the road updates? It's always those in the urban ring, and they are paying more taxes per square foot. But when you look at the amount of open space that these individuals are taking care of and keeping our county beautiful, so it's a great place to live, that is what makes the difference. And that's what we need to continue to foster. And those that live in this urban ring and using the services, it's right that they pay for those services.
Thank you. Madison, no? Please. Marty Thomas.
Okay. The farmers would not be able to afford to run their farms in the manner they run them now if the program was done away with. This will not save any district any tax dollars. It would, in the long run, it would probably cost the county some more tax dollars. And this is a state-mandated program. It's not an Albemarle County-mandated program. It comes down from the state. So I don't know. Maybe the state should. They created the program. I don't know of any land participant that is a land speculator. land use participant, by being a farmer, horticulture, anything that they are being validated for or they are qualifying for, they are not land speculators. They're not sitting there waiting for that land to get up to a certain value and taking the tax break until so they can build houses on it and sell it for millions and millions of dollars. I mean, I can't imagine running to the bank with all that money in my bag. That would be really, I just can't imagine anybody in the county doing that. The revenue sharing is a lot more than we missed out on as far as what we're collecting from the land use. It's $18.8 million we're going to give the city, and I think it's about $12 million is what we're basically not collecting in taxes. I do not support changing the land use plan in any way, especially the way the state has it to be regulated right now. And plus, all these people that have these farms are the land, good land stewards that have created all this rural space that we're able to keep. So I think we need to help them along as county residents so they can keep that land rural and open and green.
There's something I feel like I need to correct here. I agree with a lot of what Mr. Thomas just said about the benefits of the land use program, but it is not state mandated. Counties in Virginia, in fact, don't have land use. It's adopted voluntarily by counties. If you adopt it, then the program that you have is pretty well established by the state. The values on the land, for example, are the same statewide if you opt into the land use program. But it is not. We're not required to have land use. We do have some choices within the land use program about how it's structured. And the other thing, just to keep in mind, is that. You're not able to look into a person's mind to determine whether or not he intends to develop his property or not, to determine whether or not he qualifies for land use. But the land that is where the North Point development is going in has been in land use. The land where Hollymead Town Center went in was in land use one time. There's land out on further out on 250 that's where the NGIC project is and it's going to expand, that's been in land use. So there are developers who have taken advantage of the land use program and certainly lowered their taxes for many years that ultimately developed their property.
Well, I appreciate your comments. I want to remind everybody, though, that this is a forum and not a debate, and that we will give you time to make your comments at the end of this with another wrap-up session. Mr. Lowry, did you wish to comment?
Mr. Perkins, but on the next question, I'm going to insist that Mr. Cummings go before I do, just so we have diversity.
Go ahead.
Am I? Yeah. Yeah. My wife and my family bought 40 acres out in Albemarle County in North Garden in 76, and we are good stewards of our land. We worked very hard to pay for this. We have a young farmer who runs cattle there and makes hay. It's not very good hay, but at any rate, we are benefiting from land use taxation relief, and I have no interest in altering that particular benefit, which because of that, it keeps this rural legacy which has been passed down to us from generations from the settlers, but also the people who took care of the land before our settlers ever came here, the Native Americans. So we have it's a sacred duty to maintain the rural areas of Albemarle County and other areas. Land use taxation relief helps to do that. It also helps. I grew up in Lexington, as I mentioned before, and played football with a bunch of folks who were farmers in Rockbridge County. And they, some of them had to stop playing because their farms were barely able to make it. I'd like to see farmers be able to make it better, and this helps to keep farmers viable and also keeps that land out of becoming developed land. The revenue from it may not be as appreciable as folks would like, but I think it the benefits of the green and the rural legacy and keeping the family farm in business is there outweigh any other considerations, frankly.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lowry?
Am I on?
You'll get your...
Okay. I live in North Garden, as Mr. Cummings does, and we put land under land use this year after living down there for 20-some years. The next thing we got in the mail was a revalidation form, but we're in land use. The question is, if it disappears, what would happen? And as we've already covered, the agriculture industry would completely go away. The timber industry would disappear, too. Two-thirds of the land is already in land use in Albemarle County, but services on the residential area still pay taxes. It's a very significant property tax contribution. What I see is that the true way to have agriculture land stay agricultural is for the land to go into conservation easements. It's a much stronger case. But as has been pointed out, the state of Virginia offers land use as an option, and many agricultural people take that option because it's a tax deferral program. In other words, if the family ever does need to cash in the farm, they pay back the payback taxes 5 years or 6 years, and then they have their property rights. Well, even though conservation easements are the superior way to go because you're forever forgiving your right to develop that property, and agricultural users then could be farmers, it doesn't give the farmer a choice. So I think land use is very important because it allows the family living on the farm to make a choice which way they'd like to go. My final comment, the Rio people are here and they say how few people are farmers. The irony is Samuel Miller is mostly agricultural. And again, it brings me around to the point that we need to have revenues from the growth area to help the agricultural people so they don't have to shoulder the burden by themselves.
Thank you very much. We have time for quick responses to this one final question, and then we'll have a wrap-up session. For each candidate, what are your views on the bypass around Charlottesville? Ah.
Which one?
And in 2 minutes or less. Okay, Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Larry seems to want me to go first, so I'll... We came here in 1970. In the 70s, they were talking about the Western Bypass. We talked about it, and I said, why wouldn't they think about going down 15 and joining up with 64? What doesn't make sense about that? The topography was easier. The land was, the eminent domain would not have been buying homes as much as it would have been buying a little piece of each farm on either side of the road. It's much less populated, and frankly, it was before Historic Green Springs actually set itself as a historical area. So that makes it more difficult now. But as you have seen, there is an eastern considered bypass right now, which goes into Albemarle County. I feel like that will go right through some farms that I would not like to see be lost. So I'd like to see if that ever happens. The bypass around Charlottesville would be on 15. There's been some discussion about extending Leonard Sandridge Road. I think that's idiocy, frankly, not to put too fine a point on it. But the Western Bypass, that the topography there is not attractive. It's terribly expensive. Anywhere from 8 to 20% of the traffic on 29 is flow-through traffic. The rest is our local traffic. So some of the designs of the 29 corridor, whether it's the interchanges and the parallel roads and some of those other issues to the way 29 places 29 has been designed, will take some of that traffic away. But as far as a Western Bypass, I think it's, we need to drive a stake through its heart permanently, and maybe that will never happen.
Okay, Mr. Lowry.
Yes, the question is about the bypass, and it's come up because of the corridor study being done, commissioned by the state of Virginia. The bypass is one subject. There are several different alternatives on how to go around to the west, but really I'd like to speak on the seriousness of the ability to fund road improvements in our area. We have a problem of flow right now. We have a state that is not sending money to our community, other communities in the nation, in the state. So it's not a lack of planning that we're missing. We're missing a lack of funding. And particularly for us Samuel Miller candidates, we need some things in our area. Sunset Avenue extended and Fontaine Avenue. We need to have access in Samuel Miller on the northern part of our district, because these residents in Redfields, for instance, have no alternative of how to get out of their subdivision if there were an emergency. They only have one way. We need, it's not the bypass that's so important. We need lanes connecting hydraulic to the traditional 29 bypass. We need the rural road program to be funded. The real issue is not the Western Bypass. We need to have a state that comes off of holiday and is responsible for doing what they're supposed to, not only maintaining our roads, but giving us money to do road improvements, or they need to let our community look out for themselves.
Thank you. Dwayne, and we'll just go right on down the road, if we would, please.
They tell us, through the studies, that roughly 10% of the traffic that we have in this area goes straight through the 29 area and out of the county. So they say that in building a bypass, we're building it mainly for those 10%. And what we really need is to make it easier for the 90% of the people that are moving around the inside of this city to get around more effectively. I think the Hillsdale Connector, the Meadowbrook Parkway will all help with that. I also think the Burkmeyer Extension would help with that. And I think that's going to alleviate a lot of the traffic that we have on 29. I think down the road, whenever the money becomes available, they tell us that there won't be any real money available for at least 7 or 8 years, if even at that point. So I think we try to proceed ahead with these the roads that I just mentioned, and see what that does as far as eliminating traffic, and with an eye on the future for a bypass. Thank you.
Mr. Thomas?
Okay. Well, I really like the bypass, which I call the connector, way before Butch Davies even came up with that word. I thought it was a very good internal road that we needed. Not disagreeing with anything anybody else said, but the speculation was that the traffic coming to 29, the percentage was pretty high as to how many cars would be going into the university grounds. If it bypassed, that road could have been put in, it would have eliminated a high percentage of the cars blocking or backing up at the 250 bypass interchange there at 250-29. Consequently, everybody didn't want it, and then there was an agreement. There's a three-way agreement between the University of Virginia, City of Charlottesville, and Alamo County that they'll go through the steps of elimination before they finally decide that there is going to be a bypass built. I'd like to see that looked at again. I think it's 20 years old. Dennis, you might remember more than I do. Is it that 20? It's about 20 years old, and it wouldn't hurt to look at that again and review it and see if it's not time to see what the entire area needs to do. The Burkmeyer Crossing, that's not really what I wanted to say. Burkmeyer Road that crosses the Rivanna River, the bridge needs to be put in. And of course, that's going to be millions of dollars, and you know who's going to pay for it. And the next step of that would be the other side of the river on the north side would have to be rezoned from RA, which is rural areas, back to something that could be utilized for so a road could go up through there and hook into Hollymead Town Center, go across all the way down to the North Fork Rivanna Research Park. That would be really good. And then the parallel roads, I think, are needed in certain areas. You need to get the roads off of 29. But all that is stemming on Places 29, which is $500 million, is what they've estimated. They don't know. They don't know what that's going to cost. I don't think there's really a good idea of that plan ever coming to fruition. I'm not for the interchanges on 29 to supposedly make the traffic flow. I personally lived here all my life. I don't want a freeway on 29. I would like for it to be a business district. It is our downtown, and create it and build it more into that way. Places 29 has got a lot more work. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Rooker.
Yes. Can't answer this question in the time allotted. I've been working in transportation in the area for about 20 years. Mr. Lowry kind of put his finger on the biggest problem we face right now, and that's the fact that there is no funding for transportation in the state. We received about 90% of the roads in the county by mileage are secondary roads. 6 years ago, we had $5 million for secondary road construction in the county. This year, we have $1.6 million. That's without reduction for inflation. We've been notified that's probably going to be cut in half in the next 6 months. Commissioner of Transportation, or the Secretary of Transportation, sent out a notice a couple of weeks ago that all secondary road funds would probably be eliminated in 2 years. Keep in mind, a lot of these road projects that are being talked about are secondary roads, and they're saying there's no money in the plans for secondary roads. However, when you're looking at the state level and how you vote at the state level, please keep that in mind. Somebody needs to solve the transportation funding problem. As far as we have a long-range transportation plan, we have a short-range transportation plan, we have projects on Route 29 that we have traffic model that we know work. For example, Hillsdale needs to be built. It will take 8,000 to 10,000 vehicles a day off of Route 29. Local traffic that wants to move along that corridor. We know we need to add a lane on 29 from Hydraulic Road south to the 250 bypass, along with an extra ramp at Best Buy. City and county both carry that as a high priority project. We don't have any money for it. We know that the six laning in 29 needs to be continued at what we call the hourglass from Polo Grounds Road out to the Hollymead Center, where we lose the lanes and then get them back. That again is in our plan. We've traffic modeled it and know what needs to be done to improve traffic flow in that quarter. We have put an ITS system in, that's a computer driven system, to smooth the flow of traffic, to time all the traffic lights on 29. And I think that if you go up to Airport Road, drive south, you'll find that greatly assists the movement of traffic in the corridor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sutsky.
It's always tricky to go sixth because they cover a lot, and that's a good thing. I mean, a lot of what's been said is right. I strongly agree with my opponent, Rodney, that we cannot let 29 become an expressway. And I think that was one of the original reasons why the community looked at the so-called Western Bypass. But VDOT has, I think, correctly concluded and certainly definitively determined that that road isn't going to get built. It was $240 million, and whether we want it or not, it's not going to happen at, what is it, $1.6 million this year and nothing in the future. That doesn't mean we give up and just, you know, stack up on 29. We have to come up with real solutions to our transportation challenges, and we have to do it home, here at home. What we've worked on the board the last several years is towards that goal. We've approached this by trying to increase the density of development activity into the growth area so that it's more concentrated. And by doing that, it makes it more viable to have a more robust transit system. And that is partly why we were able to get the Enabling Authority out of Richmond to create a Regional Transit Authority and shift the orientation of its routes to 29, which is, as Rodney correctly points out, our main street. We need to do that. That should be our top transportation priority, and not focusing our time, energy, and dialogue around the Western Bypass. In addition to expanding our transit modality, which will get people off the roads, we do, believe it or not, have some value to gain from increasing bike traffic. Some people will ride their bikes. If they're in their bikes, they're not in their cars. The other thing is the parallel roads. And if the board is going to be able to deliver anything out of Place of 29, it's that parallel road that is Berkmar that's been described already. And I've been working hard to try and get the Planning Commission and now hopefully our board to support having the rezoning of the land south of 29 or south of Hollymead Town Center down to the river so that we can get the proffers that will get us a long way towards building the bridge that will make it possible to complete that parallel road. Once we've got that road, people can come down Berkmar, cut across at Rio, and go in the Meadow Creek Parkway. We will have done a lot to address our transportation challenges without a bypass. One last comment. this crazy idea of putting a bypass through Keswick. I don't think there's anybody on our board that would have any interest in doing that whatsoever. I certainly don't, and I do agree with the idea that if there's to be a bypass, it ought to be somewhere around Route 15 to the east, and I would be supportive of that.
Thank you very much. Now for the final wrap-up, we're going to allow each of the candidates to give a three-minute wrap-up comment, and we're going to start with Mr. Cummings on that end and go straight on down, if you will, please.
As Albemarle County and the rest of America dig our way out of the economic mess, which in some fashion all of us have been party to creating, I believe we need creative and visionary ways of addressing our myriad challenges. I recently attended the Lynchburg to Washington train celebration downtown, as some of you, some of the other have might have attended. The appeal of it is because it is a private public partnership between the city, the county, and also Amtrak and Southern Rail. I think there are other opportunities where we could try to employ public-private partnerships. I drive to Lexington every weekend to see my little 94-year-old mama, and we go up and down that 81. I don't know how many of you drive that, but I would like to see that be addressed in the transportation plans that that impact us. The League of Women Voters candidate survey asked all of the candidates to reply as to the three most important issues in Albemarle County over the next 4 years. I responded, the very most important issue facing the board over the next 4 years in a period of declining revenues will be maintaining the services for our citizens that we've come to expect in the areas of education, transportation, affordable housing, human services, and recreation, while encouraging smart growth in business and job opportunities for our youth. The second issue would be continuing to improve upon our excellent educational system and being open to new strategies for success in this arena. Third, allowing vibrant development only in the urban ring while protecting our beautiful and healthy rural legacy and our clean air and water supply. Finally, I'd like to thank the senior statesmen of Virginia for having this forum, and like to thank my other fellows up here at this table for conducting this in a courteous and respectful manner. I think that's it's a credit to Albemarle County and to the candidates here. As you all know, there's entirely too much ugliness in politics, and we don't do that here in Albemarle County, and I'm proud of that. Thank you for that.
Thank you very much. And now we'll hear from Mr. John. I'm sorry. Did I cut you off again? The pause is okay.
Finally, I'd like to thank the audience for coming here, because this is an exercise in participatory democracy. And as either Jefferson or Adams, and it might have been Washington, said right after the Constitutional Convention was completed, well, there you have your democracy. Now you must keep it. And that's the way we do with these sorts of events. Thank you.
Thank you. And now Mr. John Lowry.
Thank you, Mr. Perkins. Thank you again, senior statesman, for your forum. Thank you, audience, for your question, and also thank you for your attentiveness. Next month, the Samuel Miller District faces change, and for this, those of you who are from Samuel Miller, I ask for your vote. Each of us candidates can see the county's needs, quality of life in Albemarle, a good education system, and efficient transportation. What makes me stand out as the best choice is what I offered voters when I announced in April. We need vision and leadership to solve pressing county needs. There is a Chinese proverb that says vision without leadership is a daydream, and leadership without vision is a nightmare. What I offer is both leadership, some of both, leadership and vision. I have these because of my work experience. I have these because of my community participation over the decades and my previous government experience. There is more to what I offer. Each month, the Board of Supervisors has a portion of the meeting set aside for personnel matters. I know personnel matters. I can effectively recruit volunteers for the county in service, and I have experience in hiring matters. I also have good people skills. In my working career, I learned how to keep customers happy. Now it is constituents. I can use my skills to keep constituents happy. My vision for our county is to keep our rural character, but keep our taxes low. I can see going to Richmond to attend relevant House and Senate committee meetings. When things Albemarle are discussed, I think we need to have someone in the room. And finally, I want to do what you want me to do, our constituents. I have no list of things that are my wants. My object is to do the wishes of the constituents. To those of you in Samuel Miller, I ask for your vote. I will work for you.
Thank you very much. And now, Mr. Dwayne Snow.
I'd like to also thank everyone for being here. It's a long time. Thank you so much for being patient. I have three reasons that I'd like to ask you to vote for me. Number one, I've been on the State Agricultural Council for 10 years. And I understand the importance of protecting our rural area and also the importance of helping our farmers and having an idea of what it takes to run a farm in this day and time and the challenges that they have. Number two, I was on an architectural review board for 3 years, and I understand the issues relating to zoning and land use. And then number three, I'm a businessman of 35 years, and I understand the challenges of running a business in this area. And I, most importantly, related to that, I understand the importance of listening to the customer. When I would go out and talk with a customer about landscaping their yard, I would say, what did you have in mind? Why did you call? And you have to listen very carefully and write down the things that they had in mind so that when you come back with a plan, you address those issues. In the being on the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, you have to learn to listen to your constituents and understand where they're coming from and what they feel is important for the county. And then you add that to fact and common sense, and then you make a decision and go forward. The number two thing that I've learned in business over 35 years is the importance of listening to your the people that work for you. It's amazing how much they know, and it's amazing how much they can tell you in ways of doing things more efficiently and ways of saving money. One quick example. I'm down to yellow. I don't have much time. One quick example. We had this large bank that we were trying to landscape. I had no idea how to get mulch on it. And I thought maybe of a crane. I thought maybe of several different ways, but I couldn't figure out how to do it. So finally, I told my men, mulch the bank. I got in the car and left. Came back a number of hours later, and they were just about finished. I had budgeted 4 days to mulch that bank, and they had finished it in a day. And what they did, they cut a piece of plastic 4 feet wide, 80 feet long, and put it down the bank. They put the mulch on the bank, and it flowed down the river, down the plastic like a river, saving me time and money and making that job more profitable. If we will learn to listen to our employees and get their ideas and incentivize their ideas, you will find ways, even on a balanced budget, to make ends meet. Thank you.
Thank you. And now, Mr. Rodney Thomas.
Yes, I also would like to thank everyone for attending today. You were a very attentive audience, and I hope that we didn't bore you too much with all this county rhetoric. But it's what we have to do, and I think all of us up here for that one purpose is to come to the county and to treat the people of the county in a respectful way. I would like to say one thing before I do the closing. Hillsdale just is right out here. I really didn't support that when it came on as a commissioner, and I'll tell you why. One first reason was the traffic. I was afraid of the traffic, and unless it's calmed down, crosswalks and whatever they're going to put in there. I haven't seen the design, but I think they're supposed to be 25-mile-an-hour speed limit and crosswalks at every, I mean, really all the way up and down it. Another thing was, too, the reason I didn't do that, because it's going to dump all the traffic over into Northfields, Huntington Road, Raintree, because people are going to go straight across rather than going down Rio Road. It's to me, it's going to ruin that neighborhood also. All right, in closing, I will listen and respond to the citizens of the Rio District. And I said, listen, before the important decisions of the board are made. Again, many people in the Rio District have urged me to run because they felt their issues and concerns have been ignored. I will work to keep your taxes low while making sure we properly fund our outstanding education system, police protection, and fire rescue services. Alamo County's education system and its teachers have worked hard to keep the county a quality education system. And I will educate to keep the education at the top of Alamo's county priority list, at the top of it. As we move through these trying economic times, Alamo's biggest challenge is having a government that we can afford. You can afford. I can afford. All of us. Asking citizens to just pay more taxes is not the solution. We must try that zero-based budgeting and limit this runaway spending. Once all the facts are in and the costs are known, we must move forward with a responsible and affordable water plan. That has changed a lot, too, since I did not sign the pledge. And I'm so glad I didn't, because lots of things have changed. Having lived here my entire life, I know Alamo County. Having served for 8 years on the Planning Commission, I know county government, and I ask you for your vote and to be your next Alamo County Rio District Supervisor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Thomas. Mr. Dennis Rooker.
Thank you, Jim. And thank everyone for being here today, and thank you for sponsoring this. It's been a pleasure. The county has significant challenges, as all localities do in this trying economic times, and I think the biggest challenges we have are dealing with the economy and its impacts on governmental services and our citizens. To give you an example, our social services department today has about 15 less people than it's supposed to have under state and federal guidelines, and it's supposed to be totally funded by the state, but it's not. But the county actually funds about $4 million of social services operations, and it's still 15 people short because the state has got funding. We have about $80 million of mandates in our $300 million budget, and those mandates don't stop. Recently, you may have heard that the Commonwealth Attorney came before us and said she might have to stop prosecuting misdemeanors, including traffic cases and domestic abuse cases, because the state had cut her budget. Well, her office is actually a state office. It's a Commonwealth attorney. It's supposed to be funded by the state, and in fact, the county is funding half of that office today, and so on. What we're seeing is a terrific cram down of state obligations to the counties, and in times like today, that's extremely difficult for the county to deal with. So I think that's a huge challenge, and I think we've got some very intelligent people here, good people working running for office, and we look for, I think that all the good ideas we can get together need to be used to implement solutions. We need to continue to try to protect our natural resources and deal with population growth. There's been talk about growth here today. The fact is our county grows at a rate of about 1,000 people a year, and we have a car for every person in the county. Every person, we have over 90,000 registered vehicles in the county. City's got over 40,000 registered vehicles. Every time someone moves to the area, they bring with them their car or cars, and that adds to the congestion, and they bring their kids into the school systems. And growth generally does not pay for itself. I mean, an example is if somebody buys a $200,000 house today, they pay about $1,400 of real estate taxes. If they have one child in the school system, that child's costing the county about $11,000 a year. That doesn't include fire services, rescue services, zoning services, parks and recs, et cetera. So, you know, it's very difficult to talk about growing your way out of financial difficulty. In fact, if you look at the tax rates around the state, I think you'll find the places that have the highest populations have the highest tax rates. That's generally the rule. And we need to find resources to provide infrastructure in the county, especially transportation, which we talked about quite a bit earlier. Thank you for giving me the opportunity over the last 8 years to serve on the board. And since I'm unopposed, I think I'll be going another 4 years. Thanks.
That's a good assumption. Finally, Mr. David Sletsky, please.
Thank you, and thanks to all of you for spending some of your afternoon with us this here. A couple things. First of all, it was said earlier today in response to my suggestion that that I might want to study the issue of the complex issue of land use tax that, oh, there's always another $1 million for another study. Well, I want to make it very clear, I don't farm out my work. I do it myself. I'm very invested in my job on the Board of Supervisors. I spend a lot of hours and I take a lot of energy and put it into my job. When I said I wanted to study it, I meant I want to study it, and that's how I tend to approach this job. There's really good people. Every one of the folks up here I've gotten to know a little bit during the campaign cycle, and I like every one of them personally. But I'll tell you, there's been we've had three debates already, and there's been a lot of rhetoric, a lot of sound bites thrown around about zero-based budgeting and I'm going to cut out the waste, and not a lot of specifics. And I keep waiting for specifics, and I'm not hearing them. And I'm finding it kind of frustrating because, as we've all discussed today, we're at a very difficult and challenging moment in Albemarle County. We have some very serious cutbacks coming from the state where they're dumping their responsibility on localities to fund required mandatory things, and then we have to come up with the money somehow. So what I've tried to do in my 4 years is be creative, innovative, bring leadership to the job, and to actually offer up some specific solutions. And as I've described, there's been instances in the budget dialogues where I have voted against things that I thought were good because I thought that they were financially excessive. I brought forward a transferable development rights proposal a few years ago, not as a fait accompli, but as an idea that I thought would be healthy for the community to explore in the hopes that out of it we might get some way of reducing rural development rights with a market mechanism to compensate farmers for those development rights. I haven't given up on the idea. Our discussions with the city are somewhat promising that we might be able to have a program that's useful. I was instrumental in bringing green jobs to this community, and that was an innovative way to try and address a challenge in our job market, which is that with the housing economy in shambles, an awful lot of people who used to build homes are not in work right now. And by this particular program creating the particular kind of jobs that it would put those folks back to work. And I thought that was important work to do. When it came to the stormwater regs, I went to Richmond and I did the work that I needed to do to get the change necessary to help Albemarle County and the rest of Virginia hold on to the bay, but at the same time hold on to the opportunity to have further economic development. This is not an easy job, and good people often sit on the Board of Supervisors and don't accomplish a whole lot. They speak their mind, and they often speak the will, the spirit, the desire of their district, but not actually getting any of the outcomes that the district really wants. It's a particularly important moment, I think, for you to select for each of the races that are in front of you this year on the ballot box the supervisors who you believe will be able to do the work necessary to achieve what needs to be achieved. And I would submit to you that my record for the last 4 years demonstrates that while I might sometimes stir the pot a little bit, I put a lot of energy in, a lot of thought in, and I do come up with creative solutions that do solve serious problems. And I would ask that you give me the opportunity to do that for another 4 years. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I feel like a band director up here. I want to thank so many people, like Sue Liberman on the timer, Mr. Peterson and Mr. Gould back there who provide these excellent communications, and of course the Senior Center for having us as their guests. And you, as an audience, submitting your questions. We couldn't have done it without you. They were very good. I apologize for not getting to all of them, but we just ran out of time. And finally, I would like to thank all of these candidates because they have brought to us a very intellectual and complete assortment of ideas and energies, and we're indeed fortunate to have them. So I'd like to thank them very much for their efforts. Thank you.
For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Gould.